I kind of half thinking about, like, do you know what? I'm just happy what I'm doing now.
Because if you go back, I'm going to have to go back.
I know, yeah. Man, but it's going out to Cuna on a Thursday evening, like in November. I'm like, oh, I'll be standing in the wing freezing.
I know.
Do you know, yeah. Getting knocked over by 120 kg fellas. Yeah. Like, oh, just slough.
Yeah, you're not ready yet.
I'm just slough. I might go play a bit of Invitational Sevens in the sun or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get you involved in that.
There you go, lads. Yeah. Yeah. So,
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland. Proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome back to House of Rugby URC. We've got another huge show for you this week, guys, with the knockout stages of the championship taking place. We've also got the band back together. Lindsay Pete, Greg O'Shea are here. Lindsay, how'd you go on your holidays?
I'm good, great time. Yeah. I've just come out of my flight simulator this week's show. So, great time. Great to have a bit of sun and, you know, go somewhere new after 2 years.
Excellent. Greg, you were over at the London Sevens last week?
I was at London Sevens, yeah. I was working there and the lads did unbelievable. They're having some season. So it's good to be in and around again on the other side of the line this time, which is kind of weird for me, but it's good to be there.
Great stuff.
I did miss it, yeah. I did. But that's like the top 1%. They're the best days. Yeah. I'm not willing to do like driving out to Blanchardstown for training every
I'm
morning.
I'm not willing to do the first work to play.
I'm done.
Well, we've also got a special guest in studio this week, former Munster winger Ronan O'Mahony. Ronan, how are you keeping?
All good now. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Yeah. We're going to start off, obviously, straight away and dive straight into, I don't know, we call it a game the weekend. We've got three Limerick men in studio here who are going to be dissecting it while Lindsay laughs at Munster's poor performance, shall we call it, against Ulster at the weekend. I called it with Darren last week, lads. I've been saying it for weeks. I didn't think Munster were going to do it, but I didn't think it was going to end in this fashion. 36-17 win to Ulster.
You didn't think Munster would win?
No, I know. I didn't back them at all.
But sure, a couple of weeks ago they went up there and won.
Yeah, but we said off the back of that was probably going in dangerous territory because Ulster actually hadn't been beaten really too many times up in Ravenhill. And then, well, as a player, you know, when you're going up there having won, it's easier for Ulster to have gotten there.
Do you think?
I thought so.
Underdog, like.
Well, I called it like a couple of weeks ago. That was the danger part that, you know, it lingers, that they're one of the few teams that would have beaten them. So I think they were dangerous going in.
Ronan, you were up at the game, you were doing a bit of commentary at the game. What do you make of it, like, from an eagle eye point of view?
I don't know, I got stung on the show when Munster shipped their worst performance of the season. But I was up there. Look, it wasn't great viewing. Even from the outset, Ulster looked like they had more emotional energy around the whole game. Munster looked a bit flat. As you said, it's an incredibly hard place to go and play. I've been up there two or three times myself as a player, and it's a real hostile environment. You know, the crowd really get on your back. It's a really tough place to go and win. And, you know, in fairness to Ulster, I thought they were savage. They played really well. I thought they had great cohesion amongst the back line, amongst the forwards. Stuart McCluskey, Balakoon was phenomenal. Stuart Moore at full back. I thought they were really good.
And why do you think Munster were so out of sorts? Like, they just didn't seem to turn up at all mentally.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That happens in professional sport. Some days, when a couple of people aren't firing and things don't go right, even from the first kickoff, I think it was Pete, knocked on the ball and kind of
set the tone.
Had a bit of a spiral effect, and I could see they were desperately trying to claw their way back into the game and trying to get something, and it was just another penalty and another penalty and compounding errors, simple handling errors, and unfortunately, it just, you know, yourself in a game like that, it just snowballs and you find yourself.
You had a ridiculous stat, Jason, with the handling.
Yeah, I was looking at the game, so the game wasn't over at that stage. I can remember talking to the lads and looking up some stats, and at the time, there wasn't much left in the game, and Munster had thrown 99 passes and they'd knocked on 11 of them. So, I mean,
it's every
between
one
that
in
and when Gavin Coombs got such a great block down on Cooney. And then he couldn't ground it. I was like, you know what? It's actually, you'd love that mercy rule when you're like, we just need to go home
now.
It's just not going
to
work.
They needed that. Like, they needed that moment just to try to get back into the game.
Yeah.
And see if they claw something back. And look, that's the way the game was going. They weren't getting anything.
Oh, listen, absolutely. But do you think, like, obviously they had such an immense game against Toulouse a couple of weeks ago. Do you think they're just zapped of energy from that? Like, a colossal. And like Peter O'Mahony stood out that day, but are Munster in that transition where they have such a historic, experienced old guard, but they haven't yet blooded the new players to come up and take that responsibility?
Yeah.
Because it's hard. Like, rugby is not a game you can force. Like you said, when you try and force it, then you're having knock-on. There's penalties, you know. You can't do it. You have to let the game come to you. And when it's not coming to you, you know, where do you go?
I know, yeah. I suppose it was a combination of a number of factors. The fact, obviously, a lot of the coaching staff are moving on. You know, like, what coach is actually getting the players up for that match?
Yeah. Like, you'd know, you weren't Munster for years, Ronan. Was it weird being listening to the lads in the dressing room when Van Graan comes in and tells them what he wants them to do? But they subconsciously be like, sure, he's leaving. Like, you can't really buy into what
he's
saying.
There definitely is a bit of that, you know. When I was in my time in Munster, I've had five different head coaches, and there is a transition period, yeah.
What was that, 10 years?
During my academy year, and then when I went into my contract years, there was five.
That's nuts.
From Declan Kidney to Tony McGann, Brad Penny, Axel, Rassi, Johan.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of transition, and when it comes towards the end of the season, it does get, as you said, like, coaches moving on. They're after a massive game against Toulouse. They're knocked out of Europe. That's like the baby for Munster. You know, we want to win European rugby, and we want to be competitive in the league as well, and try to get something out of that. But they just looked a bit deflated, they looked a bit flat, and they looked low on energy. And then on the other side, Ulster looked like they're humming when they came out of the tunnel. Yeah. They just looked like they had loads of energy, a lot of young fellas, very eager to play rugby. And
that's what I found, mad, because from my years in Munster and you being there, the amount of time that was spent on like defensive moves and who's going to take what when, and Ulster caught open the boys two or three times off first phase, which is so uncharacteristic. Like the likes of Chris Farrell, Conway, Delande, they're just getting opened up like.
Yeah, and like their defence has been pretty good all season. It's probably the main strength of their game was their defence all year. But you look, Delande was kind of out there for a couple of weeks injured. Conway was only back in after a couple of weeks out injured. And they only had two backs on the bench. So then when Conway went off, they had to bring Ben Healy on. Yep. It was probably a bit of an oversight. I would have put a third back just given the makeup of the back line. You bring one player on and you have to move Carby full back. You have to move Mike Healy onto the wing. And it just changes everything from how you would have been training during that week, you know.
Yeah. I was actually with Joey Carby yesterday and I was chatting to him. I was like, what's going on, man? Like, and he said, we're just ready to close the chapter on this season and they just all want to get to next season and start fresh. Like, he said, I think they're just exhausted from it, just all the moving around the coaches. But they've done all right. They got two quarterfinals, URC and European Cup, which isn't the worst. Obviously not great being a Munster man, you should be fighting for the title, but...
We're probably being a little bit harsh on Ulster. Like, I thought they were good. Like, they took the ball right on the game line. Like, Hume was ridiculous. Like, his little pop pass, he had such a split second to get that off. Ballincoon ran. Like, they always had a man running. They always took to the game line. They were always asking Munster questions. And for me, Ian Henderson was... I actually didn't realise he was so quick. He ran back on a kick chase. And I was like, Jesus, you're moving. And just the work rate of him. And they were just so cohesive and together. And... Yeah, months were poor, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to dig the knife in this week. I feel
you're right in saying that. Like, you have to, you can't take credit where credit's due. Ulster were good. But Ballacombe was fantastic. Hume, that's the best game rugby I've seen Henderson play in a long time, because Henderson had a very up and down season. And you're kind of like, that's the Henderson of old. Like, and he was getting in and he was really aggressive over the ball. And you could see how pumped up he was for it.
And Cooney. He had such a great game before, and he was lively. He was back to himself. Mm. So I think Ulster had everything.
Look at the try they scored. The fight happening on the right hand side. Like,
that kind Hume of, again,
yeah,
quick tip.
You know what I mean?
Quick thinking.
Things like that as well as quick thinking, but that's also down to the mentality of Munster, and like you're more inclined and more interested in starting a fight than you are in getting your defensive mindset.
So
that's not a good look.
It was a terrible look like for Munster to be distracted by that. Like, that would never really happen.
Yeah, Munster actually did it to another team earlier in the season. I think it was Craig Casey who scored. And it was very uncharacteristic for him to concede like that.
I think they just met obviously Munster didn't turn up mentally, and then they just met an Ulster team that were just on fire.
It was just
a bad day to meet Ulster up there. Like, you know, and everything went well for them.
Everything went well, and like even offset, their set piece was unbelievable. Their maul was very good. Their couple of strike plays when we see Ballacoon up the middle of the park, that's training ground moves that you practice on a Tuesday, on a Thursday, and then you produce. Well, Munster had that opportunity, but just didn't produce on the day, you know, they didn't get their accuracy right. So
it's so rare for it to just be so clean off first phase as well, and they did two or three times. Like,
I know,
so it's crazy. How good was Ballacoon when he did the three efforts in a row?
Ah, it's crazy. Yeah, it's just a monster hit.
Go to New Zealand now.
Yeah,
he
got Joe. He tackled Joe. That would have been Troy if he didn't get him. And then he turns it over, and then he makes the break afterwards as well.
Turns it over the kick. He makes the break then after set piece. That's like that's three moments in the game.
Massive.
Save 7 points and you end up scoring seven the other side. Like, that's
14.
That's game changing swing. Like, yeah.
Yeah. James Hume was the centre of the day, wasn't he?
Yeah, man of the match. Fantastic game. We keep saying about him. Like,
he
quieted down for a while, like, after playing so well and getting into the Six Nations squad. But last few weeks now, he's really playing well. He's obviously going to go to New Zealand over the summer, especially with the extended squad that's going to go. So,
would you say he'll go ahead of Chris Farrell? Do you think they'll bring Chris Farrell as well?
I think if it comes down to he's only going to bring the four centres, he goes ahead of Chris Farrell, I think, at the moment. Even though Chris Farrell has been playing well and has found form the last few weeks, I think he does. But It depends on the size of the squad they bring, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I suppose it depends on what you're looking for against New Zealand as well. Do you want Chris Farrell? Do you want that big physical presence? Mm. Or do you need James Hume? Or maybe there's room for both of them. You know, Chris has found great form as well over the last few weeks. But Hume was phenomenal the weekend, I thought.
His hands were unbelievable.
He was aggressive. He was punching holes. He was
picking lines,
yeah.
See, this is the argument for me against, say, the Southern Hemispheres, because obviously Ireland need to match physically when that happens, because that's where they'll target us. But obviously then we have to adapt our game to be more skillful. And I think James Hume, over the last couple of weeks and this season, has shown that he can unlock that. Like, even his show and go on his break and the quick pass to Balakun. So I think we need ball players. The other side of the coin for me is, you know, as players, if you're confident and you're playing well for Munster and you're not getting an Irish call-up, you're like, what else do I have to do here? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then you kind of, for me, mentally, like, we talk a lot of it at elite level is, you know, man managing, you know, and with Razzie gone, like, a lot of the mental side, the Munster players are gone. But for me, if James Hughan or Balakun don't get the opportunity in Ireland jersey, I think, to go away, you're going to lose them lads and the confidence they've built in a good season. And I think they're the key decisions for the development of the squad, which I'd risk right now for the World Cup going forward, because I think we just need
Be overlooking Stuart McCluskey either.
No, I think he's in another great season.
So serious form at the moment.
You could just see that. The whole Munster midfield were sitting down with McCluskey because he's such an attacking threat with ball in hand, but then he's such subtleties to his game, his handling ability. Mm. You know, they ran into the same play two or three times, you just don't know whether he's going to carry, and then last minute he's pulling a back door and unlocking the likes of Balakun and Moore on the outside channels. So, you know, it's up for grabs, a lot of centre spots there.
And if he brings up his squad, special mention, I think, is that we have to give a special mention, because I know we're saying how bad Munster were, but Keith Earls, I mean, he signed a contract during the week, and as per usual, I remember I said on the show a few weeks ago, I was like, I'm sick and tired of people underrating Keith Earls and writing them off. He gets a new contract straight away. I remember putting stuff up in Rugby Lad and stuff up in Rugby Joe, and it's just, he's getting jobs to the boys, he shouldn't be getting a contract.
No,
he's finished, he's back. Everyone seems to write off Keith Earls. Comes out then, world class finish for that first try. Absolutely, there's very few wingers in the world that can finish the way he finished that with that try, I think. And another second try then as well. Like, and you know, every bloody week it's like Keith Earls finished, like, but he just shut up, like, and just watching.
Yeah,
like, you know,
but he's nearly 35, like, I think
he's 35 in a few months' time, yeah.
So he's just signed another Irish central contract. I was actually surprised to see the RFU give him another central contract. I thought Munster might have signed him again, like, but the RFU to back him for another year. They obviously want him for the World Cup.
I still think he's Munster's best winger, like,
no, he's class.
If you've got a fit Keith Earls there at the World Cup, you're bringing him. Yeah. You're bringing him, I think.
Well, what's he bring to a squad? Like, you're with him for years.
If you were to write out the job description of a winger, like, first and foremost, the score tries. You know, that's, and when I was playing as well, like, I knew that was my main job was to put 5 points on the board for the team.
You're like a striker.
And Earls, he does that, and he does it, pulls a rabbit out of a hat, as we've seen there against Ulster, gives Munster a glimmer of hope. Can they get back into it?
But what's he give to, like, an overall squad?
Earls, he's defensive. His defensive mind is incredible. You know, he reads the game so well. He's like an extra coach within the team. During the week, you know, in meetings, he's leading the defence as such within the Munster team. He's been through the rigors, like, through loads of different squads, and he's just a phenomenal player, teammate, and the defensive qualities he brings. And then we talked about his finishing ability. You know, is he 34 years old and he can still finish. He mightn't have his out and out pace he had when he was a younger player, but you know, he's got two tries a weekend. I think when Munster played Ulster a few weeks ago in the Kingspan, he got in for one as well. A walking, but look, they all count, and himself and Zeebs are still up there. Munster's top try scorers, and
He's consistent. I think consistency is
without doubt.
It's a big statement by the RFU, I think, to give him a central contract. They obviously have him in the plans for the World Cup, like, so that's one spot full. Fit.
But it's also, as I said, it's not just how good he still is. Like, you see, you hear Ronan talking about him there. We've heard the likes of Darren Cave and stuff talk about him. Anyone that's played and trained with him, what he brings behind the scenes. You even said it, like, when you were there, like, how he helped you when you were there younger. Like, so
good.
That has its weight as well, like, and that has its value. Especially you're going over to a World Cup environment. You're off for a good few weeks. You're in training camps before, and someone like this guy, if you're going to bring a Balakun in, and you've got even guys like James Lowe, they're not in that Ireland squad that long. Yeah. Someone like Keith Earls is a veteran who's played at the highest level, who is probably the best winger of Munster I've ever produced. No offence. He's up there, you know what I mean?
100%.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
but as Greg was saying, and what you're saying there, like, if Balakun or Jordan Armour go to the World Cup, and you have Keith Earls beside them, giving them little tips and little pointers, and he's there, he's like this reassurance that maybe he mightn't get into the starting team, maybe he will, but, you know, to have him there around the squad, giving his input, and as I said, he's like an extra coach. He's coaching that back three. he's coaching with the 50-22s now. You know, he's coaching your backfield defence and
definitely.
So, and it will be huge going to World Cup because it's different having week to week games, and he gets to go home and he has his kids and his wife, and he gets to just disconnect that, or any player. But in World Cup, you're actually just in this bubble, this intense bubble. Yeah. So to have an experienced player, having the younger, just to reset them and give them that time out was huge.
No training matches, no training sessions. Absolutely. Like, and if you're starting and like, and you've got hours against you, and then he said, "Look, come here, look, you're doing that wrong, do that wrong." You're like, "Jesus, it's going to make all the difference ahead of the pool match the weekend." But we're going to have to touch on our pal Johan. I know I've ripped into him a few times on this show.
You hate him, man.
I don't hate him. He's a nice guy, but I don't rate him. I met him loads of times.
And what's it like?
He's
in
a nice, absolute gent. He's a really nice man. He's a nice.
You're so fake.
Can we get past that? Right. Look. Okay. Speaking after the game, his comments were the result was utterly disappointing. I think that's pretty fitting because that's what his reign has been with Munster from start to finish.
That's cold.
And especially particularly in the last couple of years. Now you worked under, or you played and worked, we'll say, worked as your profession under Rassi, probably one of the best, if not the best, to ever do it. I'm sure he was phenomenal. And then Johan came in. I know you were injured and whatnot for a bit of it. Like, but do you know? Can you? What was he like as a coach?
Yeah, so I suppose when Rassi came in, it was an unbelievable environment. I think he changed Munster for the better. I think we were on the right trajectory. Obviously, we went to the whole anthem. He went down to South Africa, won the World Cup with them. We'd prefer if he stayed in Munster and won a European Cup. Maybe he'll come back in time. And yeah, Johan came in and it was different. They're completely different. They're shock and cheese. They're completely different characters. You know, Rassi is the hard, drilled approach, while Johan is the, I suppose, softer, getting to know you and a kind of softer approach. And
Rassi's very tough love, isn't he?
Rassi's tough love, and it's exactly what we needed. Yeah. We needed tough love, and we just needed straight facts. There was no grey area. It was black or white. It was this or that. And with Johan, it just got a little bit... there was just uncertainty in what we're doing. What are we doing now in defence? What ways to attack on what, you know, and I suppose your head coach, he drives the environment, you know. You're in there and you're living it and breathing it every day, and you know, if that environment isn't humming, the player is a little bit off, he might be off of 5% and it starts leaking throughout the squad.
There's even like Razzie's backroom staff, like Jacques Nienbaer, he would be driving defensive sessions as well. Or I don't know what Van Graan's backroom staff were like.
Yeah, like Jacques was incredible. Rassi was pulling the strings and Jacques was the man on the ground, running around, getting it all done. Like, he was phenomenal, unbelievably. And then JP Frere is there, a great fella as well, but probably doesn't have the same pedigree in as a defence coach as Jacques would have. But Munster's defence has been good, but on days like that against Ulster, Jacques would be there on the sideline pretending to be the physio with his physio bag walking up and down.
Still doing it.
Yeah, shouting on, telling you exactly what calls Ulster are going to play, or what moves are going to run, what players to watch, tell you watch the winger, this is what they're going to do.
Unbelievable.
And he'd be running on, pretending he's giving you a spray and telling you you need to do this, that and the other. And
it's genius.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And it was just, that was just so good. And I remember at the time our defence was absolutely humming, like under Jacques. And it's just a little bit different with JP, and he has a different approach, which doesn't mean it's bad or worse, but I think the defence has gone slightly backwards. I think our attack, since Larkham's came in, has definitely gone backwards from where it was. So and a welcome addition, seeing Prendy and Leamy coming into the coaching.
That's a big thing, I think, like, as you were saying, kind of like with Rassi, like, need a bit of tough love. I'm sure Prendy and Leamy, especially Leamy, will give him a bit of tough love. But also, a lot of what people have been saying the last while and the last couple of years is that Van Graan doesn't seem to understand or appreciate what Munster rugby means to Limerick and Cork and the rest of the counties, and what it means down there, and what Toma Park means, and what Europe means. Someone like Leamy and Prendy, who are, they're proper men from Munster that know what the score is. Like, do you think that's what Munster need at the moment? Like, get Munster men back in there to sort shit out, essentially.
You definitely need a Munster man in the coaching ticket, without doubt. You need them around, just because they know the AIL structures, because you have players cropping over, you have players going back playing that. They know the school system, they know lads can know the school, they just know how it runs, and they know the culture, I suppose, of, you know, it's very hard for Johan Van Graan to come into Munster and understand the culture and all that straight away. And he just didn't really get it, you know. It's like, no, this is what we're doing, or this is the way it goes, and he just struggled with that, I felt, a little.
The Munster lads understand the system you came through, like the school system, 20s, 19s, where lads are coming from, even probably know some of their families, like, it just builds that culture. So I think those lads coming in might spark the Munster performances again. Do you think they will?
Munster DNA. We said this a couple of weeks ago. We just felt that, like, you know, like Axel and Leamy and everyone who were during that successful period, and some of the younger like the Craig Caseys and the Ken Dallons coming in, like you can see that in them. But we need more of it, because there's no point in having these big names who don't understand the heritage and
where
the
they
DNA.
Came from, like, yeah,
no, absolutely.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think one thing probably Leinster are doing well, and we've seen that with Joe McCarthy, which we'll go in our next couple of sections, is the school systems in Leinster are just a production line.
Yeah.
Like what's happening in Munster.
They've got a lot more, I don't know, that's the thing. Like,
oh, listen, they absolutely, and I'm a Northsider, so I'm not in any of the schools, like, but they are like a mini academy feeding into a bigger academy.
They've got a lot of private schools in as well, like, where we don't have that so much in Limerick, like, and a lot of our, like, Crescent Camp and Arts School and Munchins, where a lot of the players are coming from, and there isn't that many private schools that they can literally farm rugby players.
The thing with Leinster is that I think, what, 95% of the squad is from Dublin, like, or something crazy like that. Yeah. Like, you know, they're all homegrown lads. And you've Leo Cullen there, who obviously knows where they've came from. Like, so it obviously works. Yeah. I mean, do you think that's going to work for Munster next year?
No, it's going to be there's going to be a big fix, I suppose. We talk about the academy and the underage. There's a massive fix going to have to happen there, especially in the school system. You know, the Leinster lads are coming out, and they're playing international rugby within 2 years, while the Munster lads are going to school and learning how to do weights, you know, properly.
Yeah.
That's the kind of difference. You know, you want your fourth, fifth, and sixth year in school. You want to be coming out fully conditioned and ready to go into professional rugby, while that's only happening in Munster when they're coming out of school.
Yeah. So it takes 2 to 3 years for that even SSC to kick in.
As you said, like the Joe McCarthy, he came out of school and he's unbelievable.
Listen,
like,
you don't even have the facilities, like, in a lot of the schools in Limerick wouldn't even have. Like, I remember, like, even when I was in school, like, Art School gym was just like a little shed. Now I know they've got a new school now, like, but a lot of the camp, Castletroy, are their gym facilities, are they great? Like,
they all need investment. Like,
yes, and
again, if you're a private school, it might be easier to get investments somewhere or wherever. But public schools, it's just not there.
It's not.
But what might work for you guys is, considering the, like, geographic, and it's a lot bigger, is like a bit like the GAA, so centres of excellence that are run by Munster. So, like, they're close, they're like a little hub.
Yeah, we used to use UL, that's what we used to use.
Absolutely. So, the schools that, you know, you profess in S&C, like, whoever's handpicked from the schools are in there, and at least get some batch of players, like, already ahead of them, because.
They've tried to do it all the way along, like, coming up through Munster. They've tried, like, the tips, like, we've, like, under-16s going in the morning, training in UL and stuff. Mm. But I think they need to get more funding to the schools, because obviously. Three different schools from Limerick here, three big schools, and like all our gyms are like sheds on the side of the school. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just not going to do the trick to go up against like a Michaels or a Clongowes or a Terranure. Professional academies nearly, like.
Yeah, you'll get an outlier, you'll get an Alex Kendellin, like, who will come out and be able to go straight in within 18 months to 2 years. But if you want a proper crack off it, you need to upgrade
invest
the school
in the
systems, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll get any credit when Munster becomes successful for revamping it?
Look, moving on. We'll move on to. There was another quarter final on the weekend. How did the Leinster get on all right?
Well, obviously, we had heartbreak last week, and they had to get back to business, and they did so in style against
Cricket
a very poor Glasgow team, where they put 12 tries on them. And
how are you scoring 76 points in a quarter final? Like, Cup rugby, like. I saw it and I actually laughed. I was like, did Glasgow even turn up? Like,
They weren't playing the second half anyway, like.
Honestly. No. Yeah, some of the tries that went in at the end, the Glasgow guys were just like, alright.
Genuinely gave up.
Didn't
I've never seen a team give up in a game of rugby. I was like, as you said, a cricket score, 76 points.
It's nuts, like, yeah.
Like, and Leinster didn't have a bulk of starters, like, and I know they put lads on the bench, but like.
No Sexton, no Lowe, no Keenan.
No. Do you know what I mean? Kelleher was injured. They didn't really get out of fourth gear.
Third gear, I'd say.
Yeah, third gear. They really didn't. Really, look. Like, when Frawley got that intercept, I was just like, I'm actually embarrassed. Like, I'm a Leinster fan through and through, but I was shamefully embarrassed at Glasgow. I was like, you are shameful.
Yeah,
I could have got my mother's friends to show up. They would have ran back for that.
Leinster are in a spot now where they could probably compete with two different squads in the URC.
Yeah.
Man, definitely.
Both make quarterfinals.
They're both in the final then, Leinster A versus Leinster B. Like, honestly.
That's actually not funny. That could be
genuinely, I think so. Like, look at Larmer. He didn't go to La Rochelle last week. Or he might have been travelling reserve or something. He didn't play. And he was the best player on the pitch there. Yeah. He was incredible running around.
Might have missed a beat by not bringing him last week.
Because
Lowe wasn't fully fit. Larmer had that game against Munster. And now we've seen him in that game there. they really struggled to break down La Rochelle. Mm-hmm. That could have been a bit of an oversight there. Maybe he should have travelled to
What a time for him to start stepping up, like with the New Zealand tour coming. Yeah. He has to go.
Will they bring him and Balakoon?
On form, you'd expect it.
Two of them coming off the wing, after you're trying to cut through defences, you know, in that open play, I was like,
But you're saying that these guys need to be rewarded for playing well.
100%.
The fact that he can play full back helps as well, when you're travelling.
Yes, and you know what? He's developed the kind of more mental side of his game. Like I thought he, his draw and give was better. He had a try-saving tackle. And you know what I loved? A couple of things when he started, he got a lot of turnovers because he just used to flop. And now you can see his leg drive and his power. And I'm like, yes, boy, we're starting to work on areas you weren't doing so well. And I think he needs to be rewarded. He was electric. Yeah. He was, everything that was good. He got man of the match yesterday. Everything that was good about Leinster, he was involved in. And I think, welcome back, Jordan Lennon.
Yeah. Ronan, you've played against and with a lot of good wingers. Like, have you ever seen a winger with a step as absolutely outrageous as that man?
Yeah, he's great. I have.
Who?
Sonati.
Oh,
if you've ever seen
Newcastle.
Him play. My first ever game for Munster, he was playing for Zebra, and it was my second game for Munster, and he's the most outrageous step I've ever seen. He played for Newcastle. Sonati.
He did, really. I remember seeing him inside, outside.
Oh, my God.
We previewed him all week because the winger comes off to... After an attacking scrum, he takes it as first receiver, and it's like, lads, don't get done with his step. Just do not get done. And everyone's like, yeah, he's going to do it. And you can see him doing it, and he just tiddles. How is this possible?
He's Fijian or something, isn't he? I think, or something
I'm
like that.
Sure
he's an Islander.
From, but if you look up YouTube, he is different gravy.
Yeah. I remember clipping a try of him years ago, and it was Newcastle, and literally, I'd say that much space down the wing, and in the space of half a second, he goes inside, outside, boom. And you're like, sorry, I don't even know how your legs can move like that. He just kind of just shocks in then like that.
Yeah.
The winger's like facing the opposite way by the end of it. What's going on around him?
Well, that's what Larmer did to number 10 from Glasgow yesterday.
Yeah.
Turned him inside out. They were on a man and then he beat him by 2 metres. It's insane.
I love how he uses it as well. He doesn't just use his feet, he uses his arms as well. So he'll have the ball in his left hand and he'll jump off the left and he'll switch it back to his right hand, back to his left as he's moving his feet, all in this one little movement to just bamboozle the defence. You're nowhere. How do you defend that?
Does he do that with his ladders and training? He's just in and out.
I was going to say, I wonder, does he work in it or is it natural?
Because your eye then is following the ball and trying to follow his feet, and you're
late coming, because I'm more than sure he went to Andrews, which is a more hockey school.
Yeah.
He played hockey, I saw that.
But I think he's late coming to rugby.
Yeah. He definitely played hockey 100%.
Jimmy O'Brien as well. I'm a big fan of Jimmy O'Brien.
Yes.
He looks like a fella you could play literally from 10. Out the way, 10 centre wing full back. Obviously, he played the weekend. And
he's played 10 for Leinster a couple of times.
Has he? Yeah.
He has.
He was impressive last week because I felt that, obviously, La Rochelle targeted him out in the wing and he got caught a little bit once, but he's developing week in, week out, Jimmy. He's not only attacking, he's smart. He's another good player.
Yeah, and a big fan of him, so I'm watching play. He's so elusive. He's got great footwork. He kind of full package, kind of like you were Keenan in a way. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they're spoiled for choice.
Saying all the wingers you're mentioning there, I know they're going to bring a big squad down to New Zealand because they've got the 5 games. But you're saying there, so we're talking about Jimmy O'Brien and James Larmour, then you've also got Jordan Larmour, and James Lowe. Then you've got Mac Hansen, and you've got Conway and Earls down in Munster. There's going to be one or two names you've got. He's not travelling. He's but look at the front end. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to be Andy Farrell at the moment. Well, I suppose it's a good complaint.
It's a great complaint.
It's good to have this beret of talent, as we call it.
They'll definitely bring a bigger squad, given the fact they're playing the Maori All Blacks, I think, in 2 games as well. I think they're definitely bringing a bigger squad. They don't usually have midweek games on a summer tour, so.
Yeah.
With five or six games they're playing, they definitely have an extended squad anyway. So
they might
see a few more lads getting picked. Yeah.
Looking at the match itself, I know it was ended up being 70 something points cricket score, but Richie Gray was kind of lucky enough there in that first half for that stupid challenge on Gibson Park. Got a yellow card for it in the end. Like, remember we were talking about that before
down
there.
Giving him a red.
Could have been worse, because he comes in with the shoulder into the chin and it's just reckless, isn't it?
Yeah, it's dangerous. Gibson Park made a meal of it now, to be fair to him. He went,
what's he supposed to do?
But in fair, it was dangerous, so you can't do that. You got to knock that out of the game.
I would have punished him just for the fact that I just thought he was petulant and he just got aggro. And I thought overall the Glasgow's discipline was just poor. They had 2 yellow cards, did they not, in the game?
Yeah.
Probably just frustrated.
And they actually could have had a third. I thought it was a deliberate knock-on. They did something and they already had a yellow. And I think that's what saves him. And I was like, you're not going to give a second yellow for a team who haven't even showed up, So I just thought overall, I thought he lined them up. I know I hate when people make a meal of it, but I would have probably just sit out the long and given them the red.
No, it's so dangerous, in fairness,
He just lined them up.
Crazy. How do you think Leinster will do in the semi-final? They can't be stopped, really. Can they?
Bulls in the RDS, and well, probably be in the RDS, or I don't know whether they use the Aviva or the RDS up themselves.
Yeah. I'd say the RDS because I think the crowds weren't great yesterday. And
it's less than 10k there, I think.
They've already beaten them 31-3. I don't see them. I think it'll be a more competitive game, but I don't see
this.
See,
the Leinster fans, they spent all their money on Heineken Cup Champions 2022, yeah. Like, so they were buying
all
their jerseys.
I'm probably buying new drinks
flowers.
Last week in all the interest.
Well, you know, I was looking after them.
We're good like that.
You know. No, but in fairness, like, you can appreciate the fact that they did, a lot of them did travel over to Marseille, so it's straight off the back of that. You know, it's
bank holiday.
Marseille wasn't cheap, lads. It was 8 or 9 quid for a pint over there. Like, so, you know what I mean? I'd say they're all fairly.
Sure, you weren't paying for anything, lad. You were outside all for a drink,
really. When in France,
well
cheap.
Looked after. Thank you.
Running around getting photos at all the goals.
Appreciate it, BT. Thanks, lads.
if you uploaded another photo with another rugby legend, like, it's gonna be sick.
It was good crack.
I loved your media last week.
Yeah, it was class. Yeah, did you meet Rog as well, were you chatting?
I did after the match. Rog done a groin and stuff like so.
He's in good form, obviously.
They're all in great form. There's him.
I've never seen him smile as much in a week of media reviews. Yeah. I was like, no.
The clip they showed on BT of him coming down the steps after the final, and he's stopping and he's like hugging his wife and his kids and all these people, and like, you're just like, that is the happiest I've seen like Ron McGarrett, because he's such a serious character, and he's just
but it just shows what a coach can do for a team, you know. La Rochelle, have they ever featured in Europe like up to when Raj came in?
Really.
Like, they might have been in the mix once or twice, but Raj comes in, make the final of
European final
last year, and now they're after winning, and it just shows you get the right coach in with the right mentality who builds the right environment, and you can produce the goods. And even reading Raj's articles in the papers, like, did you ever read his articles in the papers?
A couple of times, he's very good.
After you finish reading them, you actually want to go out and play for him. Like, you're like, this fella, everything, it's just gold. Like, and you can just picture him in front of the squad, giving his spiel and getting him motivated, and you're like, that's the fella I want to play for.
Yeah. So he said it in the pre-match press conference. The first two things he said when he got there, like, was he's trying to explain to the players, you have no idea how much this competition means to you coming from Munster. Yeah. And they were just kind of like, after a few years, he said, now they finally see what this crazy Irish man was talking about, because that's the way I was grown in this competition. And he said the second thing then is the first when I first got here, because La Rochelle had a lot of money before he came in, and they were bringing all these players in, and he stopped that, and he started bringing players up, French players, which is why France is successful across the board now. They've gone back to their academies. They've won 2 20s World Cups or whatever, Junior World Cups the last few years. They just won their first Grand Slam in 10 years. He was like, I want to build this club around the people from the area and the players from the area. Which is why Munster were so successful in the past, because like, he's using the successful Munster blueprint.
Yeah,
it's just a pity he can't bring it back here.
Yeah. Well, I'd say Munster are only gagging to get him back as DOR. Surely.
I don't think he's going to come back.
Yeah.
I think he's gone too big for Munster, unfortunately.
But the thing with Rog, it's kind of sad. I'd love to talk to him on like a private basis, because when he retired, he got no send off. It was like, oh, he was just gone. Remember that kick against Scotland where he did a crap crossfield? Then he was just gone. And then I think Bod retired the next year. There's a big parade in Dublin, it's probably still going on.
I was like, what about Rog?
It's like, Bod has a lot to thank for Rog for everything that went on. And then he went away to Crusaders quietly, started coaching down there, Racing quietly, La Rochelle. Now he's after winning the European Cup. And now everyone's hullabaloo about Rog. It's like, do you care about him when he retired?
I'd love to know,
is he a bit bitter?
Sport is a cruel, like, cruel world. You know that yourself. Like, you were to retire young, like, no matter, like, you're easily forgotten about, no matter what level you play. Like, even for someone like Ron Nogara, just going, whatever. It doesn't matter who you are, it's just the way sport works, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right, it happened very quick. And even with Munster, we all normally have an end of the season. When Rog retired, I think it was 2013, because I was only just coming in senior player. I think was it Claremont they played, and that was his last game. I think
he never told anyone, did he? Just kind of said it after the game.
And that was it. Like, I think we still had some of the league or something left in the season, but that was kind of last year's season. He wasn't there for the kind of end of the season wrap up.
He's top point scorer for Ireland and everything, like, and he was just gone. In one day, gone the next, and no one said anything.
Yeah.
So.
But he went after Racing, but I think out of
Crusaders first.
He speaks of Crusaders. The way he speaks of Scott Robinson and Crusaders, and
I'd say so.
It kind of seems like he's learned most of what he's doing now
off those guys. He's fairly put in his work, hasn't he, the last couple of years? Like it makes sense that he is where he is now, just learning his trade.
I think a big thing people forget as well, I was at the European Player of the Year kind of awards thing the morning of the match, and they were going through the history of it and stuff. When they first brought the award out, so I think it was 2011 or 2012, he was voted the best player because they wanted to do a one when they first awarded the award. The competition was on for like 10 or 15 years. Like, who's been the best player over the last 10, 15 years? And O'Gara won that.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean? So that's how highly regarded he was then at the time. Like, to be, you're the best player in Europe over the last decade or so. Do you know what I mean? Not just for the year. Like, so that's how, like,
yeah.
Do you know? And he's obviously transformed that into become one of the best coaches in the world. Yeah. He's probably the hottest coach in the world at the moment. I don't think there's a club or country that would turn down on
name your price. Like, you name your anywhere. Price.
That's it. You win a European Cup and your value just goes through the roof. That's so.
It. To do it so quickly, though, to do it in the manner he did it, like, as in, he had a COVID-riddled season, and then he had his first proper full season. He got to the top 14 final and Champions Cup final and lost both of them narrowly. And then his second real season in charge, he goes on and wins it. And they're still in contention for the top 14 as well. So he could.
And actually, with, like, I know you were saying, like, a lot of the Leicester fans, well, we'll win them. The only thing I was thinking was, Leinster were so bitter about losing in the semi-final last year to La Rochelle. I was like, oh, they're going to mentally have one up on them.
Yeah.
So for Rog to get it right even further, which we were saying, I was like, oh, I hate you for that. It was like a game of chess. I could see him just, you know, having everything ready. But I also think he's a man, he won't leave them. I think he'll just keep building the dynasty that he's created.
You don't think he'll come home, no?
Not in the state months we're in, I'm sorry.
He said they're only getting started, so I presume he's going to be there for another few years.
Yeah.
So
it's inevitably will come on, but it's going, as you said, it'll be a few years. He will, because I think he loves Ireland.
He's like, a Cork
He's a very proud Irishman. Mm. He loves Munster. He loves Ireland. He will, but he's in no rush whatsoever.
He's in no rush. And for a time in your coaching career, like, international coaching seems to be the, not the cushiest, no, but like, you've only 10 games, you're not on the road every week as you are with a province. So like, if you did come back to and Munster, if you're 4 or 5 years and then you coach an international team, but that's you out till
that you done then, really.
So he might be timing it perfectly.
Yeah, should be delighted living over in France. That's it.
Look, it's meant to be lovely, La Rochelle.
We'll move on. Like, we could talk about O'Gara all day. Like, we could do a full podcast out of me. So interesting. But we've got some fine questions to run. Not too serious now. These are grand. We haven't prepped them this week, no. So, but they're all right. They're fine. They're right. So first one up is, as most of our listeners would know, you had to retire early because of injury. How was the transition from rugby into the non-player world, especially when you was taken away from you when you weren't ready to go?
Yeah, I suppose when I finally made the decision, it was like a weight off my shoulders, because I was struggling with injury for the bones of 18 months to 2 years, trying to get, I think I played 2 games in that space of time. But then when I initially retired, I suppose the first six months were kind of like a bit of a novelty, or this is great, and you got a nice little send off, and it was probably after the 6 month period we were kind of like, oh Jesus, what am I doing now? You kind of, as you said, you get forgetting about really fast. And I'm okay with that, but my kind of attitude now is like, I've been there, I've done that, and you kind of look forward to, like, the world's my oyster now. I can kind of, what avenue am I going to go down, or what way do I want to go now? So, you know, it's exciting times now, but I suppose that kind of after 6 months, there's a little period there where you're wondering, oh Jesus, what way is this going to go?
Did you find it hard transitioning? You did, like, mentally. Yeah. I know I retired last August and I found it very hard to transition and get away from the structure of training every single day.
Oh yeah, I need structure. Like, that's I'm institutionalised now at this stage. I just need I need to be told what to wear every day, what colour t-shirt.
Join your missus does that for you now,
to this stage. Yeah, but I do miss it, and I kind of strive in that structure, so I try and create a very good routine every week and every day and plan out my day as I would, but I have no game, so I'm kind of, there's this massive void where I'm like, oh Jesus, I need to fill this here. I do a lot of, I still train a lot. The one thing I chatted to everyone who retired was like, oh, I stopped training and I started kind of maybe have a couple of glasses of wine midweek and I feel like shit, and then starts, you go down this kind of spiral, you know. So
what you do for training now?
I do a lot of CrossFit, so I do CrossFit every day, an hour in and out.
Class.
I go in, I told what to do, my lead, exactly what I want, and that's it.
It ticks all the boxes for you.
Ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, well, like, you're coaching with Gary Owen now, and is that what you always wanted to do? I know you came in and did a bit of coaching with my sevens team as well when I was in there. Yeah. You're with Gary Owen now, is that what you always wanted to do?
It's not, no. But as I said, when you're not playing rugby, you have this void. You know, Gary Owen approached me and I went in. I was a little bit unsure when I went in, and I absolutely love it.
Class.
It, like, fills the perfect, the whole, like, you, when you're a player, you're kind of nervous at the first 5 minutes of a game. When you're a coach, you're on edge for the whole 80 minutes, and it's like real life championship manager, basically. You're picking your team and you're putting the lads out there. So
a lot of fellas say that coaching requires more time than playing, because you're taking care of a full squad. Like, did you find that, and do an analysis of games?
There's so much there, even at club level. Like, this is AIL level, there's a huge amount there, and I can only imagine if you're doing professional coaching, the level of detail and stuff you have to get through is...
It's a full-time gig, like, is it?
Oh, yeah.
You're loving it, though.
Oh, it's class, yeah. No, it's class. I love it. I just love being back in the change room with the lads. Yeah. You know, it's still a good age profile. I'm only 33. Yeah. Still have the crack with them. We still go drink.
And any itch to go back playing?
Can you? We were kind of stuck for backs there at one stage, and I was like, will I do it? And I was like, no, I'm not.
It's not worth the risk.
Yeah. No. Mike Sherry is coaching with me as well.
Brilliant.
Peter Malone's there. Nice.
There's been a real resurgence as well the last couple of years in the AL, isn't there? Like, it's really starting to grow again, because it died there for a long time, and last couple of years it's getting good again, it's getting interesting, it's getting crowds back.
It is, yeah. Mm. Unfortunately, it's getting dominated again by the Dublin teams, the Terran Yours, Lansdowne.
Clontarf,
obviously won it, you know. So we're not too far off. It's personnel that's trying to get numbers. You've Shannon now who got promoted back up.
Come on, Shannon.
That's going to draw a great crowd. Limerick like to have Shannon and Gary Owen back in the AL playing each other. Yeah, no matter what.
And when this man puts back on his...
We get the two of you back out playing.
Shannon,
so
are you?
I got plenty of calls. All the Alakadoos, trying to make it happen. But like,
Shannon are ringing everyone.
They're a full new squad for next year.
I'm kind of half thinking about, do you know what? I'm just happy what I'm doing now.
Because if you go back, I'm going to have to go back.
I know, yeah. Man, but just going out to Coona on a Thursday evening, in November, I'm like, I'll be standing in the wing freezing.
I know.
Do you know, getting knocked over by 120 kg fellas.
Yeah, you're not ready yet.
I'm just not. I might go play a bit of Invitational Sevens in the sun or something.
Yeah.
Get you involved in that.
There you go, lads.
Now, I know this man isn't too tough with weather conditions, but who is the toughest opponent that you have ever faced?
The toughest? That's
a good question.
I'm not sure. One of the hardest fellas I've come across, Jean Daisel, remember he arrived, I think Rassi brought him in for, I think it was a 6-month period. Yeah. He was a back row from South Africa, and he was as tough as nails. so hard and lovely fella. I saw him knock out the same person twice in one game. I don't know how the fellow's still on the pitch. Two carries. I think against Glasgow, I don't know, it was their first centre. But yes, he was a hard man. And Jaco Tout, who came in the centre, he was a tough boy as well. Yeah, I remember him playing with broken ribs, with this, that, and the other. And his attitude was phenomenal.
I'll never forget the story about him. It's probably a bit rude to say in the podcast, but I've already started the story. Is that he was playing before coming to Munster, and he got one of his testicles popped in a game. So now he only has one testicle, but he kept playing on in the game, and he popped his balls. That is a tough.
I saw that happen at a blitz out in Shannon years ago. I saw it actually get torn and pop out.
Stop, man.
Yeah, I remember him telling the story. I can't remember in detail because he was like, what?
I still want to know.
You know whether he's, are you telling the truth or no?
Give us a look.
We see it.
Yeah. He just told it so casually as well, which is mad.
He probably had it in a case to show you that.
Yeah.
So the Africans are built different, man, aren't they?
That's why we keep signing them. Next one up is, you mentioned you played under 5 different head coaches alone at Munster, obviously plus your coaches in AIL and schools and whatnot. And so that means 5 head coaches plus 5 different backroom teams.
Yeah.
Who would you rate as the best coach you've ever played under? That's a tough one, though.
As a technical coach, I say it'd be Jacques Nainwer as defence coach. Definitely, he was just phenomenal. The stuff and the detail, and just because my defence was iffy. As a professional player, I was okay. A lot of the time, I was kind of hedging my bets and going off and making reads, and sometimes getting away with it, and sometimes not. But under Jacques, I become very specific, and I had good cues and what I was doing in D, and I was reading defences better. And I suppose my game commanded more. And then with Felix Jones there, obviously I had the luxury of him being a winger or a back three player. So my aerial game commanded huge. So a combination of both kind of turned me into a good player. And then, I probably, when I started under 20s level, Axel was our coach. He was my first ever kind of proper coach when things started to get serious at Munster 20s level. And then went into the A team, and he was the A coach. Then he moved into Munster 4s coach. So he was kind of with me the whole way. And there was times where, and things didn't look great, you know yourself when you're coming to an academy and you're like, oh, will I get a contract? Or things are getting a little bit dodgy. Axel always had my back, you know, and he always kind of gave me the benefit of the doubt if I had an injury or this, that, and the other. And I suppose I'm not sure if I would have progressed and played at Munster as often as I did if it wasn't for him as well. So just a couple of combinations there that helped along the way, but a bit of luck too. So
it's some who's who of coaches you take when you look back. I was thinking, I pinch yourself, go, I played under the likes of Foley, probably one of the greatest players and to ever play for Munster, an absolute legend of the game. Erasmus has gone on to win World Cups, Nina Barr, who's rated, who's now the head coach of the box. You're like, I got to play under all these coaches.
Yeah.
Classic.
So Jack technically probably was the best, but they all had their own little their own little way of doing things, which was excellent. And I suppose as me going in now as a coach with at AA level, I'm trying to kind of take pieces of each of them and say, okay, this worked really well and this did and this didn't, and you're trying to formulate or cultivate your own way of doing things in.
Yeah.
And Axel was so good for taking care of his homegrown players. Like, he was so similar to you. Yeah. With me, so I didn't make the Irish 20 World Cup team. I played in the Six Nations, broke my face, and I wasn't available to be selected for the World Cup. And that's obviously down, because you want to go to the 20s World Cup. That's what kind of gets you into the Munster squad. And I met with him, with Axel, and he was like, don't worry, lad, I got you. He's like, I got you, you're coming into the senior squad. I have you. Like, said that to me personally. So I went and enjoyed my summer. I was like, alright, like, Johnny has me sorted. That summer I went away, I was in an accident, lacerated my Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Off the bike. Yeah.
Came home, and like, when you lacerate your Achilles tendon, like, your leg is null and void. Yeah. It's gone. Like, it's worse than rupturing because it's completely severed.
Yeah.
Came in, I was on the physio bed, and Axel strolls into the physio room, and he just comes over, digs me in the arm. He's like, you fucked it, man. And he's just like, you fucked it. And he was just, that's it. And then he just walked back out again, and I was like, oh, heartbroken. Like, fuck. Do you know what I mean? But the very was just so honest, like.
Yeah. But I suppose that's something we can look at, as we mentioned earlier in the show. Like, if you had someone like Foley, you said there, you put the arm around you. In the last few years, if Munster had an area that needed filling, they go to the market, they bring in their diesels and their Jack Otauta short term from South Africa or whatever. Mm. Now that you're going to have Leamy inside there and Prendy, and then you've got someone like Coslow in the academy, they can turn around to Rowntree and go, hold on a second, like, I've got a fella here. I think Greg can take that spot. I think Ronan can take that spot. I think that doesn't happen as much in Munster the last few years. Yeah. So let's go straight to the market, let's get someone in. Because they don't trust them, definitely. Because they're not there.
Yeah, definitely not. And what Axel did really well in Munster was he'd handpicked the best AL lads, or where they're kind of, not always, but like where they were short, say they needed a hooker, they'd bring in a hooker, and they bring them in for the summer and see what they got on. Mm. And if they went well, then they get a training contract and they'd be involved for the year, and they have an extra avenue to become a professional athlete, like a backdoor pass, say.
But, like the time with bringing Dearman McCarthy in.
Yeah.
Remember that? Like, the story with Dearman McCarthy.
Yeah.
You were in his Castle Troy team, right? He was an unbelievable player. Like, he was up there with Earlsey, how good he was. And then he obviously went kind of down the wrong path.
Yeah.
And Axel brought him back in and gave him another training contract, and he was unbelievable.
Yeah, brought him back in a few times.
Brought him back in, like, just taking care of the homegrown fellas. Like, it didn't work out now in the end, like, but just such a good guy, like, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was excellent for that. And I suppose that's what we might get now with Leamy and Prendy coming back involved, that your lads and your local lads who you want to bring through, as you said, Leinster, 95% of them are from Leinster.
Yeah.
You know, from my time growing up in Munster, it was always, the Munster team was always full of Munster players, but they had maybe five or six world-class internationals, speckling amongst that, who bought into the culture. I don't think we should be buying in foreign squad players anymore. Yeah,
peppering it with, the Doug Howlett's
I think it's fine to bring in, I know you don't like Fekitoa. I think it's fine to bring in someone like a Fekitoa, but when you're bringing in these little stopgap guys for 3-6 months, guys like Jenkins there, like, I'm sure we could have found someone else there in the academy that could have got the game time that Jenkins got.
100%.
Mm. I don't understand that.
But they don't buy into the culture, like, same with Eason Asewa. He bought into the Leinster culture, so he was able to just be one of the boys, and yourselves as players, then there's no hiding place. So you're
on a 6 or 12 month deal. Like, how are you going to buy into a contract with a 6 or 12 month deal?
Yeah.
And you know you're only a stopgap. Like, you know you're only here for the year because this fella's injured.
Yeah.
And that's it, or until this other fella comes.
Yeah. As a player, you know this fella's coming in just to pick up a handy few quid for 6 months.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
What does that do for the environment?
2 years and buying into it, or are you?
Well, the Fekitoa, I just feel like Munster don't need another centre. Like, there's enough guys sitting around there. I think Munster need to go put money into their front row. That's what I think. The lads are great, they've done their thing, but I think we just need a fresh resurgence of some front rows. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I know, like, there's obviously lads coming through, but like, they definitely need. John Ryan's obviously moving on to Wasps as well. There's going to be a bit of a void there. I can see him buying in another front row.
Yeah.
Maybe another hooker as well. I think there's a young hooker coming in from.
He's with Exeter or something like that. An English guy coming in,
Yeah.
We've got Buckley, I think, should be given a chance there at hooker as well. We miss Killer big time, because when Killer's gone, you're very, very short. But what's his name? Witcherly looks like a fine player if he gets more game time.
Your
man Knox is
time.
There. Mm. I don't see the point of constantly. I mean, he does not want to drop Stephen Archer. Stephen Archer just plays every single game, and like, he doesn't seem to give Knox a chance. I don't rate Stephen Archer. I don't know how he's still there, to be honest with you. I think we could get. I mean, we're not going to win anything with Stephen Archer at tight head, and it's no insult to the man. I just don't think. I think we need a much better tight head there. And if you've got someone at Knox there, everyone's talking about her. Maybe there's more young tight heads in there. There could be tight heads of Gary Owen I don't know about, or other clubs
yeah.
that should be brought in and given game time instead of just rolling him out every bloody week like Nan.
It's just the contrast of the Munster front row compared to Leinster, who have your Kelleher's and Porter's and Healy's, who are so dynamic. And the Munster guys are good, but they're just nowhere near the dynamism that the Leinster guys have. Like, you know?
No, because looking at Porter, like, I just seen the shape he's in over the last kind of 2 years. Like, he's in phenomenal shape. He's like, he's now fit. He's in the loose. He's now turning over ball. But like, the thing about obviously being a loose head, first and foremost, which is I was a more mobile, aggressive, wanted to be on ball. But if I wasn't doing my job for set piece, line out, and scrum, forget it. So it's a hard place to fill with. Like, again, the game has moved on, so you do want nearly, again, kind of promoting back row, like at club level, into your front row, so they're more mobile.
You need two front rows as well, don't you?
100%.
You need two front rows as because generally, like, your front row comes off 55, 50, 60 minutes. Some teams are starting to take their front rows off at half time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know Rassi kind of brought that thing in, but Rassi's got an unbelievable selection of front rows to bring on. But you see, Leinster can do that now as well. And a lot of the big European teams are able to just go bang, and the quality doesn't drop. Sometimes the quality goes up off the bench.
Alatoa, come on, and I think he's done well. Like, he's starting to. I can't wait to kind of see him next season when he's the season under his belt. But
100%.
Yeah, I think like Kelleher, Sheehan, like, they're so dynamic. They're loose. They're explosive.
And we haven't even mentioned Furlong, but we'd one more question for you, lad, before we get back into the rugby. So you played for Munster for years. You played Heineken Cups. You played loads of different games. I actually specifically remember you playing against the Maoris. So I want to ask you, what's your favourite memory looking back in Munster?
Favourite memory? There's like a handful that are all amazing. As you mentioned there, the Maori game, that was probably one of the best games I was ever involved in. Just given the fact Rassi was, everything that happened with Axel and Rassi had just taken over, and the kind of the toss around the squad and what they were feeding down to us is, we're going to play mostly academy team, we'll give you all a rest. And then I think a couple of senior players went to him and was like, so I come to Thorn Park, sold out, like, you need to. And then, like, within like 2 minutes, the whole thing just flipped and it was like, we're going after him. And that whole week and the build up, and we had a couple of days off after, so we all went on the booze for 3 or 4 days after it. And that, I suppose, those 10 days between the Maori game and after it were phenomenal. Like,
It's class. That's your favourite one, you'd say?
Definitely, just facing the Haka and Thomond Park, because I remember being when Thomond Park first opened and the Kiwis came and Munster played them. I think the last was Rakakoka scored. Rakakoka scored in the very end. But I remember being in the crowd at that match, and I've never heard Thomond Park so loud. It was incredible, and I was nearly silent going home, and I was like, that, I just wanted to be part of that. That was just so class. And then the fact I was on the pitch a couple of years later facing on the Haka, I was like, Jesus. Do you know, it all just came back to me in the moment, like, and
pinch yourself kind of a thing, like.
Yeah.
So I was in the crowd for both, like, so I can't imagine, like, I was in the crowd in that match you were talking about, then I was in the crowd for the one you were playing in, and it was just as, it was the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It was the same feeling, like, to be there. So you were literally in the exact same game a few years later, like,
it's crazy.
It's one of those fairy tale kind of things, isn't it?
Yeah, so like, that was just a kind of a moment where I was just thinking to myself, even face that, I was like, Jesus, I can't believe I actually got here, because the chances are slim. Joe, are slim, like, to do it.
That's class.
I think you have 21 tries for Munster.
Yeah, 21 tries.
Do you have a favourite one you can think back to? You scored some good ones. I remember you were so good, man. We were chatting just off air. Coming in around rucks and just sliding in and getting little inside balls and stuff. And I remember I was in the academy when Ronan was in the senior team, and we were literally told, you need to be more like Ronan, man. Everyone needs to see what Ronan's doing, you need to do that. Yeah. And like, no one could do it like you did it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it became a little art of mine, but the dark arts of a winger, we never talk of that.
You scored a couple of tries off that.
I did, and it's just having a good connection with your nine, but it's just been able to show up, like, because as the game progresses, 60, as we talked about there, you know, we're bringing the front rows off because they might be getting tired, or the back rows. And it's when players get tired, when you're kind of deep in the game, that's when I start hunting. When I'm looking back at a game, I don't look at my moments, I look at all the moments I missed, you know. So you just got to be incredibly fit. And a lot of the time, you see lads doing extras after training, and my extras sometimes were just fitness. I just run and run, because I knew the fitter I was, the more times I could get on the ball and the more times I could show up. And if I keep showing up and keep showing up, I'll eventually go through a hole.
Worked.
And then you kind of, as you develop your game, you start finding little things. Like, I used to follow the referees are unbelievable, like, and into sport positions. So, like, if you ever watch a match, I know this sounds a bit mad, but the referees run unbelievable sport lines because they have to always preempt the play and get in good positions. So I used to follow the referee around the pitch. But if you watch the refs, if there's a line break, the referee will always be on the inside. Yeah. If he was a player, he'd be able to catch a pass. So if you follow the referee, he will get you in a good off his support line. So kind of that's where I started, and then
there's one for our listeners and viewers. Very clever way of looking at it. Like, so any young players come up, like, they go, let's follow the referee around. Yeah. Hiding rucks and follow the referee around.
Follow a good referee around. You don't want to be staring into a ruck like this.
Exactly. What's going on here? Get out.
You still haven't given me your favourite try.
Oh, my favourite try. Sorry. Yeah, sorry, Chart.
Did you score against the Maoris?
I scored against the Maoris, yeah. It was class, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good idea.
Two or three, I thought I nearly got one in the first half, second half, nearly got one early doors, and then I think they tried to clear our lines and Dunk put a little, I think their whole, all the defensive team were up and Dunk put a little chip kick over, barely onside. I was just like, please don't call that back. Got it down, yeah, it was savage.
That was
yeah,
a good one, savage, yeah. I remember that, all right. It was sick.
Great stuff. So look, we'll move on to, we won't spend too much time in their two quarterfinals because we went in such depth there with the Irish team. But first up was Stormers versus Edinburgh. We all call that. Stormers have been really good second half of the season. I think they're the strongest of the South African franchises. Edinburgh, up and down kind of a season, 28-17 win for the home side. So that means poor Ulster now have to go to South Africa to take on the Stormers, which is not as good as Ulster were against Munster. And no one, you do not want to take on the Stormers in South Africa, I don't think. So that's going to be a tricky affair for them.
Yeah, it's a pity they're going away. They were good. Like you said, they're the better. They've been building nicely and they have their pick of some Springboks international. So if they come with full confidence, see it being a good day for Ulster. But I think if they can carry the form and get over all the travel and get over the physicality, and like Ulster had two good performances down South Africa, but they shot themselves in the foot with ill discipline and kind of just being switched off. They did a disallowed try that would have won them the game. So it'll be interesting. I hope it's a cracker.
Yeah.
How do you think we'd land down there, Ronan, travelling to South Africa for a semi?
I would like to play any team in South Africa, especially at this stage in the competition. Yeah. It's just, I actually haven't played there myself, but from speaking to the lads, it's a different environment, it's a different game. I wouldn't like to be going down there.
No, definitely not.
I'd be surprised if they do a job, then I'd be very surprised.
Exactly. There's a surprising result in the other game. I said it last week, we all thought the Sharks were going to win that game. It's Khaleesi and Mpimpi and all the boys, like, they're literally, how many box they have in their team? I didn't expect them to lose.
It was nuts, yeah. The Bulls won at home 30 points to 27 with a last minute drop goal. It was 83rd minute or something. They're about to go into extra time and then he slots it.
It's a good drop.
Great game.
Basically the Bulls were leading by 7 points and then the Sharks got a try in with like about 8 minutes to go, and then it was all Sharks and then it was penalty here, penalty there, and no one really took it. And then eventually they get it on the line. They're literally, it took them so long, they're literally 5 metres from the line in front of the post. And I was like, oh my God, will someone get in the pocket before you knock it on? And like everyone knew it was coming, so he got charged down by what, 8 players, and they're in his face and he has to kick it high. And he just gets it up in between like the 4 sets of arms, like, and the ball goes up. It's a good big win, big moment for him. But
it is, yeah. All the home teams won, I think, in their quarterfinals. So it says a lot about the home fixtures. We presume Stormers are going to win. Leinster are obviously going to win. What are you thinking, Leinster Stormers final?
Yeah, I think it could be like Stormers might take a leaf out of La Rochelle's book and really just smother Leinster. You know, I could see that happening, but let's get by the semi-finals first.
Ah, jeez. You're not throwing yourself into the final yet?
No, I'm not.
After scoring 76 points?
No, I won't rub it in for you, boys. It's tough morning.
Do you not give the Bulls a chance in the RDS now or in Viva now?
They're travelling down. It's probably the same for them. We don't want to be going to Ireland. We want to stay in South Africa.
And Leinster of all teams, you wouldn't mind coming to Thomond Park or to Sports Ground or to Kingspan. You might give yourself a chance. Taking on Leinster at home.
It looks like whoever has a home advantage now is going to be.
Leinster have a home final then as well.
The final month
Dublin
finishes as well.
First, yeah, gets the final.
They're giving the trophy now. Let's thank you now.
Bitter much?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
You'll have a great day out, don't you worry.
We'll move on, and we'll finish up with some pretty big rugby news. We've been talking about this for the last few weeks, but we weren't sure, because I know they made a big announcement, and they probably pretended this didn't happen, but originally they weren't going to let the South African teams, they weren't going to be in a position to qualify till next year, then be eligible to competition the year after. But obviously they've changed their mind, so they've all four teams that are in the URC are going to be in the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup next season, plus the Cheetahs. So you've got the Bulls, the Stormers, and the Sharks are going to be in the Champions Cup next year. The Lions are going to be in Championship, and they're after inviting the Cheetahs in, who we all remember from Pro 14 a few years back. So what do you make that run? I mean, do you think that's good for the competition to have these African franchises in Europe, or is it kind of like it's not a European competition anymore?
Yeah,
like
some it's still the European Champions Cup. I'm not sure. Is it just Champions Cup?
I presume it would be, yeah.
I suppose having them in the league was kind of a teaser to see how they shape up or how they get on in playing against European teams, I suppose. And they've done pretty well, given the fact four of them are in the knockout stages so far. They'll definitely probably make it more competitive, but again, I don't know how it's all going to work. Like, do you go down, if they're in your pool, you have to go to South Africa for a week and come back. It's going to be a tough ask. You're going to want to have big squads, like, as you talked about, Leinster have a big squad. You're going to be playing one team down in South Africa, you're going to be playing another team back in Ireland. I'd say that's the way it's going to be going.
Yeah, it's going to be some amount of games. I don't know if they're going to run the pools.
I'd be worried about the whole... I'm not worried about them coming in. I do think, as you said, it'll add to the competition. It'll make more interesting. It'll make more competitive. What I'm worried about is the fact that, OK, yeah, say you've got Munster and they've got bloody, say, Stormers in their group and you've got a nice big packed house. And sometimes you do just two games on, two games off kind of thing. Like, you've got a nice home game against, say, Watts in Thomond Park on Saturday, and then the following week here in South Africa. Like, generally, if there was a match on in England or if there was a match up the country or something, Munster fans would travel to it. And it's a weekend away. I mean, now they're expected to go to South Africa. And, like, South African teams over the last few years have shown that they don't fill their stadiums at all compared to over here. Mm. So are we going to have European games with no fans at them? That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
That's not good luck. Like, and that's the whole point of, like, rugby will always be, it's still a niche sport. Like, Champions Cup games, even England's English stadiums who aren't very good at filling their stadiums in rugby, they're always full.
Yeah,
European games are always full.
Leinster versus Toulouse in the semi-final there a couple of weeks ago in Aviva, they didn't even pack that out.
Yeah.
Which is mad to see. Like,
they still had 40-something, 50,000 at it.
Still had a good half, yeah.
You know, they still had 40-something thousand people to see. That's a big stadium. You have to remember that as well. Like, Aviva isn't like, I mean, Thorne Park only holds 26,000. Yeah. The Aviva is actually our national stadium that they use, like, which they sneak into every now and then to get their home advantage. That's a 55,000-seater stadium.
Like, yeah.
That's a stadium that's used for filling international games. Mm. And there's still three quarters filling it for a club game, which I think is still. They fill the RDS every day of the week if they wanted to, like, for those kind of games. Like,
exactly, yeah. Well, it kind of mixes up a bit, the South African guys getting involved in the Champions Cup. It's going to be even tougher doing now again. I wonder what the French teams think of that. Like, they won't be too happy to having to go to South Africa.
Yeah, well, obviously, they had to agree to it, like, because they're all in coats together, they're all working together, and they always say that the English and the French hold all the power. Like, but I wouldn't have thought the English and French would appreciate them coming in, so. They must not hold the power as much as we thought, because you would have thought that would have been the URC clubs that have got them in there. So then again, would the URC clubs, are they necessarily going back, because it's less spots in the Champions Cup now? For, like, there's going to be more South African teams in the Champions Cup next year than there will be Italian, Welsh and Scottish combined.
But they're the three
combined.
Yeah, sure. Like, none of the Welsh teams. There's only one
bunch.
They
didn't qualify.
Yeah, so none of them qualified. So there's more South African teams in than there is of all of them combined.
But it just highlights how poor those three kind of national teams have been. But is this going to deter them even more and put them in more turmoil? Then you kind of have to look at, where do players get a rest in that window if they're international? Like we look at Gary Ringrose, I'm thinking that's a good finish considering he's had such a long season internationally, injury, European Cup games, URC games, and I know he's managed well, but like you said, now you have extra travel to South Africa. Like, I just think, grow the game and the money, but once the money is invested right,
that's it. You know? So look, we'll leave it there at that. That's all we've got time for this week, unfortunately. Ronan, thanks for coming on. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Best of luck with all your coaching and all your CrossFit and all the rest.
Yeah, brilliant. Great to have you on. And of course, a big thank you to Bank of Ireland, our partners and proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. We'll catch you next week, guys.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.